Yeah, I mean, what exactly are you supposed to do when someone accuses you as a civilized person, much less a Christian? You know, I guess, you know, according to some people, we should just, that should be it. And there should be a defrock presentment and civil trial and possible execution.
Welcome to the Stand Firm Podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, November 4th, 2025. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm here with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. Guys, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Yeah, all right, Nick. Thanks.
I'm doing well. I had the honor of preaching at Holy Trinity this weekend. JD, has your congregation risen up and effected a coup trying to install me as rector?
Not yet, but I did have a number of horrified parishioners who questioned my judgment and my sanity after that. But no, it was great. No, it was a wonderful day. Lots of baptisms, five baptisms.
A lovely church full of lovely people.
Yeah, it was great. We're glad to, honored to have you with us.
There's no good way to transition into our topic for today. We picked a bad week to all go out of town and not record a podcast. I was going to make we picked a bad week to stop sniffing glue joke, but I was worried no one would know what I was talking about. We're all too old. But since we last posted an episode, Archbishop Wood has had a presentment lodged against him, setting off a cascade of posts and articles, including in the Washington Post, about him, about the viability of the ACNA, whether or not it's irretrievably and irrevocably systemically flawed. Then yesterday, as we record this, news came of Archbishop Wood's voluntarily taking a leave of absence from his roles as Archbishop of the province and Bishop of the Diocese of the Carolinas. Now, he's already retired as Rector of St. Andrew's in Mount Pleasant. But he took this leave of absence for the duration of the investigation and potential litigation of this issue. So, heavy times for the ACNA, you guys. This is, of course, on the heels of the Stuart Ruck trial and the jurisdiction of the Armed Forces and Chaplains fiasco. What do you make of all of it? Where do you want to start?
Well, it certainly is chaos. It's an absolute chaos. Now, I've heard two types of takes on this. One, that this just shows the whole denomination is dysfunctional and we're only at the beginning of the coming worse revelations. It's just such a terrible denomination. It's going to fall apart. The other one is, well, look, I mean, if we were that terrible, we wouldn't be hearing about these things. There wouldn't be any discipline going on. There wouldn't be any kind of adjudication of accusations, which there are. I mean, we have three bishops presently under investigation. And yes, I agree with those who say Bishop Rux has gone on way too long, but it hasn't been shut down. It's ongoing. Archbishop Wood is just starting, and then Bishop Armed Forces.
Jones,
right. He's left the denomination, but still an ongoing legal process. So all in all, I mean, that's what the church is supposed to do. I think we have to, if accusations are made and seen to be worth investigating, then what else are you going to do? I think that the timing is terrible and the optics are terrible, but I don't necessarily think it means that the ACNA is on the cusp of immolation.
Yeah, I mean, what exactly are you supposed to do when someone accuses you as a civilized person, much less a Christian? You know, I guess, you know, according to some people, that should be it. And there should be a defrock presentment and civil trial and possible execution. You know, this is, as far as I can tell, whereas we actually have, you know, a process in place. We have jurisprudence, we have church and legal processes that, you know, as far as I last checked, that as allegations and assertions, even when printed in the Washington Post and felt very deeply by people, nevertheless aren't necessarily true and unequivocally verifiable until there's some sort of process that's gone through. And if anyone's ever been accused of anything who hasn't been in a situation, you know, that has anything like that in place, then you know how complicated and confusing the fog of war can be. There was a reason why the Star Chamber doesn't exist anymore for the English Revolution, because we have adult people who clearly have grievances. There's a and there are careers and livelihoods, reputations, families, all of these things on the line on both sides of these issues, to be fair. And it's messy and complicated and at times lengthy. And what's sad for me about it is that they, sort of the cries, like the vigilante justice cries, and in any all three of these cases are so loud and strident and self-righteous that there seems to be no way for there to be a, Christian outcome of this, even if the Christian outcome was a just guilty verdict in whatever the case may be, in which case, even then there are processes of discipline and, that range from something minor to something as severe as we could enact on someone. And so I don't know. I think that's been the problem for me, is that somehow in the middle of all this, the humanity of the people has been weaponized, or at least forgotten, and then the ideology on whatever side has been weaponized to just draw lines around the people as if they were issues. And then the extrapolation from those issues has been, along the same power dynamic tropes and victim accuser and, all these things which we have been talking about now since we've been doing this podcast, that have infected the society, which dehumanize the victim and the accuser, on again, to whatever side you find yourself. I mean, there are people listening to this who, our listener probably has gone back and forth between siding with one of the parties in these various places, given the amount of information that's come out over time. Probably, I mean, the Ruck trial's been going on for what, 5 years? I mean, at any given point, there's been information that's come out or clarification made. And so it's like, it's like a pendulum swinging, at least in court of public opinion. But thank God the public doesn't decide these things. And, we have, again, this is why I was glad we didn't record something last week, because when you say something like apparently trust the process is some sort of trope that is offensive and dismissive, because I guess what should we otherwise trust? We should trust the, third party independent examiner who, I mean, again, I don't know what to do. I mean, we talked about this months ago now with the Ruck trial, when the people legal counsel resigned, and we have credible, thoughtful men of integrity who otherwise we have no reason to question, who have seen things that we haven't seen and said, well, essentially trust the process. And that doesn't mean that we can't be frustrated or hope and wish that it will be speedier, but I know that I would rather a lengthy trial and a trustworthy and clear outcome than some sort of rushed trial that doesn't give due process and defense to all parties involved. So that's kind of my take on it at the moment. But of course, I've probably just offended our listener, has already switched it on and off and is writing an angry email with two fingers because he doesn't know how to type. I know that.
It's worth acknowledging that, quote, the process and jurisprudence don't just exist in a vacuum, that they're actually built on a biblical foundation, at least our systems are. I mean, Proverbs 18:17, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. So there
That's right.
has to be, in a biblically faithful system, that cross-examination, and that cross-examination necessarily, in a system and country as complicated as ours, takes time.
Well, yeah, and in the case of Archbishop Steve, I mean, you have an unequivocal denial, categorical denial, from his perspective, from someone that, as of yesterday was the acting Archbishop of an entire province of the Anglican Church. What are we supposed to do in that situation from the outside? I'm not saying that there aren't people looking at it and doing due diligence and things, but in terms of like rushing to judgment at this point, given the fact that as much as we know, there is a statement on one side that says X and a denial of that, a categorical denial on the other side. And so, at this point, the Christian graceful thing to say is, well, there's some one of them, both of them can't be true. or at least they can't be as true on the face of it. And there must be more with respect to the details on the ground that people are going to dig into. But ultimately, there has to be a withholding of final opprobrium that comes with righteous judgment until there's been some sort of adjudication of it. Because I mean, otherwise, I mean, what do we live in? You know, we live in a state where someone can just have a, you know, can accuse this or deny this or again, I don't know. I mean, I'm, can we just delete all that? Because I mean, like, is, I mean, there's no, there's, this
Well,
is a loose situation, evidently,
we
because,
should.
you know, just online, you see people talk about it. It's a done deal one way or the other. It's already a, just clearly a reflection of misogyny and men will be men and all these things. Which, you know, may be easy to say, I mean, and possibly even to believe, but if you know these, you know, this man in particular and trust and followed and respect him, then you want to say, well, you know, I'm not putting it beyond anyone to make mistakes and to cross lines if and when they may have, but like, I'm not ready to just to I would like to the process to play out. I don't know.
Well, we should differentiate what's like the different cases here. So Bishop Rock, there are actual victims in that case, people who have been shown to be having been suffered abuse. Bishop Rock is not being accused of that abuse. It's Mark Rivera, and he's in jail. And those victims deserve the, you know, the care, comfort, help of the church. They should be able to speak about what they think about the case, but we shouldn't lose sight that, you know, Bishop Brock is not being accused of any kind of abuse here. He's only being accused of not taking the right action in light of the abuse and in making some bad decisions about hiring and ordaining and putting people in places, which may very well be the case. Maybe he made some terrible decisions in doing that. But no one's saying that he did anything especially wrong. The place where where that comes in is with Archbishop Wood, and the woman is, I think they're 40. Was she 42? 40s, in her 40s. He's in his 60s. And the really hard thing about the accusation is nobody was in the room except for her and him. I was reading, somebody posted, well, statistically, nobody makes accusations. Or very few times do women make accusations where they're making up the story. I don't know the stats on that. Maybe it is as high as 90% of people are telling the truth when they make these accusations. I don't know, but I don't care if it's 100%. That doesn't absolve you of having to go through the process of investigation. You can't just believe all women cannot be a legal position. That might be a position for your. Talking to people personally, if someone comes to you and reports something that happened, yes, you should listen to them. You should affirm them. You should do all the things you need to do to get to help them. But legally speaking, you can't just believe all women. That's not how the Bible works. That's not how the law works. So we shouldn't go around assuming someone's guilt just because of a statistic somewhere. That this charge, I don't know. I honestly don't know how they're going to adjudicate it because. Again, there's this her and him in this room, and I can totally see, without either one of them lying, I can totally see how both of them could come out of that room thinking one thing happened or the other thing happened. I can see Archbishop Wood thinking, I was trying to give her a hug. I didn't mean to make it seem like I was kissing her. I can see her saying, well, I felt like he was trying to kiss me. And both being absolutely sincere, trying to tell the truth. What do you do with that? What do you, I mean, it's just, so I just don't see how that. I don't know how to get that charge even investigated, other
Especially
than
because
hooking
of
somebody up
Wood.
to a lie detector test. But I mean,
Especially because it seems like Wood is a familiar employer, like has nicknames and likes to put his arm around people. Like that seems to just be a truth about him. And so that further clouds the issue of what exactly happened in that room at that one time.
I do hope, you know, I guess there's circumstantial things you can find out, like you can investigate the money that was given to her. You can investigate if there's anything he said about her to other people that might have indicated some kind of attraction that was inappropriate. But that's all circumstantial, really. You can't get, you're not going to be able to get to the what really happened because there's no video in the room. Which, I mean, I said this on Ann's podcast, which, Billy Graham for the win, right? I mean, this is the Billy Graham rule. Had this been followed in this case, would have we wouldn't be where we are right now.
And body cams. And body cams and Billy just have like it's like they can no, it's heartbreaking. I mean it's heartbreaking all around. I mean, to your point, Matt, I mean, I've no doubt. I watched the video of the poor woman and she's crying, and I mean there's clearly emotional and distress and everything, and no one wants to see that. And certainly not in the context that she's within which she's speaking. And so there's no there, there's this is it's not lose-lose exactly, but there's it's because of the details or lack thereof of the and corroborating evidence of this accusation. It does seem that well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I mean. Maybe there'll be some as of not yet unknown piece of evidence that will clarify one way or the other. But as it stands now, it does seem to be he said, she said, with an strong assertion on one side and a categorical denial on the other, which is a really difficult place to be in. So what we're left with is the not just the court of public opinion, but the sort of the discussion surrounding it, which people have taken almost exclusively as an opportunity to resurrect the supposed narrative that lies at the heart of male-female dynamics, much less part of the ACNA, that there's this is a example of misogyny, of power hungry, unaccountable power hungry men, doing what they want, and this is just yet another, sad saga in the poor struggle of the downtrodden for respectability and whatever the case may be. And that's what's sad about it, even back to the case of the poor woman who's crying and Archbishop Wood who's been accused, is like there's still two people involved in this, and they're not ideas, and they're not sort of talking points towards a greater agenda that you may or may not have, but that there's clearly something that has transpired in this church that is very disturbing to all parties involved, and we are praying and hoping that thoughtful, interested but detached people with counsel come in and help untangle and navigate it, that there'll be some sort of reconciliation or revelation or restitution. This is that's the hope, but it seems that what's been sad for me is that it's in some people's stated response to it, yet just another long line of a, just it's become just another talking point for a persistent drumbeat against the, sort of the founding ethos of the ACNA or however it's put. And that's, I don't know what you do about that. I mean, thankfully it's not that loud a voice. I mean, Twitter is an outsized or X or whatever. The algorithm feeds me all the things apparently that wants to spike my blood pressure, which is fine, because I look at the actual engagement and the reposts and the views, and I'm like, well, this isn't exactly a gone viral, as it were. But still, it is, knowing some of the people involved, in particular Archbishop Wood. I mean, even if it turns out to be all verified and credible and all the things, which again, I don't have the knowledge or insight to weigh in on. There's still a man that we have followed, was elected, was our archbishop, and there's a sadness attached to it, even in the midst of possible judgment, which is still we're withholding that at the moment because we don't have we're not privy to the information. But I think that's part of the sadness for me is that there's a in the entire conversation there with respect to his in particular, there's been almost like a salacious glee, in some corners about the expose and the, what this means. And now, once again, and all these ways that people talk about it. And at the end of the day, I'm just thinking of, well, we got a guy who's been accused of this and it remains to be seen about, the ultimate outcome. But, he's a pastor, he's a husband, he's got a wife and kids. And yes, this woman, she's a mother, she's got three kids. I mean, there's two people involved who whose lives have been and are being upended by this situation. And I'm not saying that somebody doesn't need to dig in and untangle it, but it doesn't seem to have been as helpful as some people think to sit on the sidelines and just use it as a blunt force tool for to further their grievances against the ACNA.
Right. Well, from the very beginning, that was the Bishop Rugg trial. That was already part of
That's right.
the narrative. I mean, that people were actively were expressly saying, "We can use this to take the ACNA down," and that's kind of the way, sadly, on the ideological left, victims are manipulated and used. People who have been hurt, right? They'll be taken up as a totem, and used to push a political agenda. And it's and in the name of love and the name of empathy and the name of caring for victims and righting injustice, under that guise, the attempt is made to import whole ideologically charged policies and programs. And the sad thing is it's not really about the victims. It's about the policies and programs that want to be pushed forward. I mean, I this is why, I mean, I'll say it again. I mean, I got in trouble for saying it, but I'll say it again. I don't think ACNA 2 has any business being a victim's advocate. I think that they've shown themselves to be politically compromised and intent on doing harm to the ACNA, or at least changing the ACNA to be more like the Episcopal Church. And they're gonna ride on the victims of abuse to do that. And it's really manipulative and sad. So I wish sexual abuse or physical, whatever kind of abuse, could be divorced from the political sphere altogether. We don't need activist groups using victims to push an agenda, either right or left. I don't care what side of the political spectrum it is. Once you start doing that, it's not about the victim anymore. You're not helping the victim. You're helping your own cause. That's where the Bishop Rugg trial became really has become really sordid and sticky, emotionally and spiritually. I need to do that with the Wood trial, and I hope it doesn't happen.
It's worth also remembering that while it is true that nominal Christian patriarchalists, i.e., those who don't go to church, tend to be abusive in higher numbers than others, evangelical complementarians who go to church regularly are the least abusive group of husbands and men out there. Study after study have shown this, including Brad Wilcox and others. So I don't think it's fair to say that the complementarian structure of the ACNA is causing these abuse issues. I think that, as you said earlier, we're doing well at adjudicating them to the best of our abilities. We've need to improve that. But in the last 2 days, I've had a chance to ask two bishops to their face, and of course, they would be accused of being biased answerers. But I've asked them if the ACNA has a systemic issue with abuse and or the covering up of abuse, and they've said no. And the answer is complementarians should be and are the most vociferous at rooting out abuse and adjudicating it and getting abusers out of the places in which they can abuse, not the other way around.
Yeah, well, I think at the beginning of this, again, with the Rugg trial and others and other denominations, that was part of the argument was, well, these things happen in complementarian spaces more than any other kind of
That's right.
space. And so that there's something systemically wrong with the complementarian view. Now, I think it's the biblical view. So if it's so it doesn't whatever the supposed fruits of it might be to people who disagree with complementarianism, they would have to convince me the biblical argument was wrong before I was willing to change my view. But secondly, anybody who has grown up in the Episcopal Church, the most egalitarian far left organization around, will tell you that sexual abuse and immorality and that kind of darkness is not something that resides only within complementarian spaces. I can tell you that as a firsthand person seeing it, and can too. Anybody who's grown up in an Episcopal church can probably tell you the same thing. It's a flat out lie. It's not a complementarian problem. It's not even an egalitarian problem. It's a human problem. It's the fact that we're right. it's that we're sinners, right? So you're gonna
step
have to
outside
sin in the church.
Step outside the church at all and look at the, you know, sort of the zero sum, you know, the battle between men and women, you know, the perennial battle where, you know, which is all about, well, let's just say that it's not a pretty picture for out there outside of the church, period. And so that you have within the church, you have, you know, people struggling with this because of sin. And yet there is a, you know, framework and a means by which, you know, sinners can be brought into repentance and restored and rightly ordered, you know, and the fact that that doesn't happen overnight or at all in some cases within the church is not surprising given the perniciousness of sin. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Matt. I think that the idea that somehow there's a unique problem with complementarian Christians that somehow exacerbates the perennial problem of sin as it relates to male-female relation. When you look at what passes for normal male-female interaction outside the church with, you know, in any sort of dating app or TV show or, you know, just social media interaction or whatever, you say, you know, there's a problem, seems to be a problem all around. Original sin is equally distributed within and without the church. At the very least, there's confession and absolution within the church, and people are fighting it and, by God's grace, overcoming something of it. And there seems to be very little appreciation for that in some corners. But you know, even in this conversation, like, what's getting me is that we're talking about, you know, Nick, you asked the bishops whether or not the ACNA has a problem with systemic sexual abuse in the same context of this allegation against our archbishop, you know, sort of implying by to being adjacent to that question that this is a case, a clear-cut case of rightly adjudicating sexual abuse, whereas what it actually is a claim that is yet to be substantiated, in which he has categorically denied it. And so again, that's where it's like, you know, it's the old adage about, you know, the question of, you know, when did you stop beating your wife? You know, it's like, I can't even answer that. I don't even know how to answer that question because it already implies guilt and complicity. And
in
that's
my defense,
the problem
asked them in front of other people because that's an accusation that I've heard publicly. And I wanted to give them the opportunity to address it in front of groups of others.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that your question is wrong. I'm just saying that that's the narrative and the framework has already been established, or at least it seems to already be established. And so the defensiveness is on the having to address the supposed just accusation that somehow the ACNA is deficient and or deficient in its judgment of and complicit in its allowance for this type of behavior, which, again, I mean, may be the case that is proven to be so, but certainly the facts of the matter don't seem. I mean, there's been some high profile, you know, grievances and crimes committed. The most notable one you're talking about, Matt, with Mark Rivera, who's in prison. You know, there are bishops that have been defrocked. There are legal recourses that have been taken up in some cases. But I don't know. This is just as difficult to talk about without hearing all of the conversation as I thought, because there doesn't seem to be a way to talk about this without first acknowledging all of the sort of accusations from the onset, which, you know, of course, well, it doesn't do well justice to the process or the accused, which is just not we have a system and we have people and procedures in place to protect both the victims and the accused in these situations. And it seems like that the entire thing has just been pushed aside. And now we have once more entrenched sides just yelling back and forth, or at least one side in particular on social media and Facebook and all the places with the zeal of the righteously indignant. And it's just distasteful all around, given the fact that at the heart of it, there's a weeping woman, with three children who clearly is distressed and aggrieved. And there's an archbishop who is denying it. And, Lord have mercy. I mean, that's where I am.
Do you guys think that Wood made the right decision in taking this voluntary leave of absence?
Yeah, I mean this thing could go on. Look, the Ruck trial's gone on for 5 years. I don't know how long the Wood trial will go on, but apparently I've heard that the presentment is huge. I mean, it's a massive amount of volume of accusations to work through. So what's going to happen first is you have to have a investigative committee, which is kind of like a grand jury, decide whether or not the accusations are worth going to trial. That could take months to sift through all this stuff. And then once the Board of Inquiry is what it's called, makes his recommendation and it goes to trial, then we're talking another more months because the church court has to then sift through all the information and hear evidence, and there has to be an actual trial. So this could take more than a year. And if that's the case, if he's still serving as archbishop in an active way, that would be a year of total and complete chaos and controversy. I mean, I don't see how you could act effectively lead if you're always having to defend yourself. You're always anxious about what's going on in the trial. You're always under a cloud of accusation. So I think it was wise of him, and the honorable thing to do, I think, was to do what he did, is just to step aside and say, I want to let the process take its course, and if at the end of it, he's vindicated, then that will be another time to make a decision. Do I want to come back? Do I feel, I mean, it might be, I don't know. I mean, I think if he was totally vindicated, he could have every right to step back, but he might not want to at that point after all the damage and the blistering
Well,
pain he's been through.
that's really the thing. I mean, there's, I think, a better than even chance that he won't come back either way, that this is actually the end of his archbishopric.
I mean,
Yeah,
if he's guilty, it will be. But if he's innocent, it could be too. You're right. Absolutely.
and what do you think? That brings up the question, which people have argued about, and many of the bishops. I haven't read. Well, I've read all of them, but I'm conflating them now, so can't quote directly. But I know a number of them, while taking seriously the accusation, which we do, and recognizing the gravity of it and all the things, nevertheless, did lament that it came out in this way. I think somebody on Facebook just recently was wondering why was the first anyone heard of this? Again, assuming that's the first. I mean, I'm having to assume that at least the first we ever heard of it was in the Washington Post. That's seems to have that's an aspect of it that has not only complicated it but has ratcheted up the rancor in a way that I think is, again, to your point, Matt, unhelpful to the accuser and the accused, just because it elevates it. I don't want to say unnecessarily, because if it's true, then that's a serious allegation. But nevertheless, it seems to have highlighted, complicated, and further exacerbated a negative situation into a horrible one, as far as I can tell. Do you have thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, the Washington Post is the absolute worst place to go. I mean, I imagine that if we were to have someone who was part of the decision to send it to the Washington Post with us, that person would say, "Well, look at again the Bishop Ruck trial. It's taken 5 years. You tell us to trust the process, but the process is it doesn't work." That they would say probably. So why to get outside accountability, we go to the press. Okay. But let's just go with that assumption that that's true, that there's the process isn't work, doesn't work. Why the Washington Post? There are if you absolutely had to go to some outside news entity to be heard, why go to the newspaper that you know very well is going to link all of this to our position on sexuality? As a church, it's going to try and paint all of it in the worst possible light to make the ACNA look like the worst possible church. The reason why we don't, according to the Washington Post, the reasons we don't, we're not taking care of women is because we're misogynists and we hate gay people. That was essentially the article that came out the other day.
Our church was born in a moment of hatred and rebellion.
We're a church born of hatred. So I hear that complaint, and I can see why people might believe that, that the process is broken and it's not going to work. So we need to go to the press. But I think it all crumbles to the ground when you look at the press that went to. You could have gone to some lesser. You could have gone to a conservative group, and they would have published it, and you would have had all the stuff out in the air, out in the open, without the accusations and the false mischaracterizations.
They could have brought it to Stand Firm. They could have brought it. They could have brought it to us. We would have. Yeah. We would have published the accused people. Yeah. That's right. We would have said, well, before we go public with this, we're going to make sure that the people involved have a chance to respond. But like, this is something that probably should be, you know, well, probably needs to be addressed. And so, no, I think that was that. Yeah, it has not just complicated it, but it's further balkanized the positions with respect to the supposed care for the soul and the heart of the ACNA, because there's some people who will not be content until every last vestige of what they see as misogyny and homophobia is rooted out of the church. And since that's how we were birthed, you know, that means, you know, all the way to the end, you know, for some. But it's that was a joke. We weren't, I mean, not joke. It was a, I was to speak. But yeah, I mean, that's what's made it, you know, in a certain sense, more complicated, because, you know, it's a sort of within a niche market, a nationwide conversation. You know, there are a lot of people. I've gotten texts from all sorts of people from different denominations that are friends, and, you know, I read this or I saw this. What do you think? And I guess I say trust the process mostly. but I also think that it does also, to your point, Matt, smack of opportunistic sort of ideological opportunism for an ongoing broader complaint / accusation against the ACNA that, you know, I don't know how we, I don't know, you know, on the other side of this, whatever the outcome is for these three bishops, that's not going away. And, you know, I don't know to what extent this has, you know, strengthened their argument to a certain degree, or weakened it, or what the sort of the larger picture outcome will be of these particular situations, given the fact that they're individual in their own right and not systemic, you know, to whatever extent that they're true or false. You know, I think that we have an opportunity here. What I've been saying is we have an opportunity for you know, the adults in the room to say two things simultaneously, is that there have been, these are serious allegations, particularly with Archbishop Wood, that are credible and need to be taken seriously. And we are walking through them with all of the gravity that it requires. At the same time, we recognize that there's a process that, like we said in the beginning, recognizes that these are complicated, complex issues amongst people who seem to have some serious disagreements about what actually transpired. And in the interest of justice, fairness, and Christian charity towards all, we're going to take as long as we need to figure this out. Now, the sad part is that because it's in the Washington Post, and because the verdict has already been levied, you know, for in many people's minds, that to your point, Nick, like, I don't, you know, I'd like to think that if he's totally exonerated, that we say, well, that was an unfortunate situation all around, but you know, you now you're back and no harm, no foul. Or on the other hand, you know, if it's totally proven true, that we say, well, justice will be served and the presentment and the, you know, whatever follows is righteous. And either way we go on, but it seems like that the allegation itself is enough to, in this current moment, essentially take someone out of the, take, you know, end the career, or at least, significantly weaken someone's ability to lead or preach or teach in a way that is just frightening, frankly, and particularly if it becomes clear that it's, that, as he says, it is totally false. You know, I mean, this is that's so I don't know. I mean, again, I'm treading where angels fear to trod in terms of saying anything at all about any of this. But at the same time, you watch all of this, and if your heart isn't breaking just across the board, then you obviously, well, not obviously, but then I don't think we're taking it seriously enough of what the outcome on either side of this will be for all involved.
People have said that because this is a he said, she said thing, and because it's, one or both, one of them is lying and telling the truth, or both are telling the truth to what they know or understand. If it is found, though, that that there have been false accusations made in a knowing way, that needs to be really dealt with legally after this is over. If Bishop Wood is totally exonerated and it's found that some of the evidence has been fabricated, that would be it'd be really important for the HNA to be sure to handle that in a very firm way. And I don't know if that's happened or not, but the last thing you want is for the ACNA to become a place where accusations can be freely made and are always believed. And then if you want to take someone down, you just make an accusation. That was my one fear. And I'm glad Archbishop Wood did this. I'm glad he stepped aside. But this could set a precedent. Like, if I don't like this leader, we're going to find someone to make an accusation against him, and then we take him out of the game, and that's it. So there has to be, on the other side of it, a fear or a legal consequence for bringing forward an accusation that's false. So I hope that's the case if it's false. I hope everyone. My personal hope for this particular case is that the woman is telling the truth, that she's not lying on purpose. That she really thinks this will happen to her. And I personally hope that Archbishop Wood really doesn't think that he did it. And they're both telling the truth. That's my hope. And that something very awkward happened, but not abusive. I think that would be the best case for everybody, that nobody's being bad on purpose, but there's a massive misunderstanding in the behind closed doors. And that as a result, pastors, bishops, archbishops would be more careful about how they use their space when, especially when dealing with people of the opposite sex, and we can have a lot fewer of these sorts of things in the future.
I just think that even were that to be the true case, we will never know that because they're never gonna get the two of them in a room and like reenact it and say like, oh, this is what I thought was happening, and this is what they're gonna be entrenched in what they think happened, and we're gonna go to the wall adjudicating that.
I know this can't happen. I know this can't happen. But here's my would it be great if they could both take lie detector tests, right? And I don't think you can do that in a church trial. But if you could, and they, well, what would happen if they both went in, they both took the lie detector test, they both passed, right? Because they both believe themselves to be telling the truth. I mean, it's conceivable. I honestly, the more I think about this, the more I can totally see how Archbishop Wood made this awkward gesture, and she interpreted it in the way that she did. And they're both telling the truth before God. If the Archbishop is lying, if he's making this very strong denial, at least about the female part, that's I don't know. I have a hard time imagining that. I also have a hard time imagining she makes it up. So
I've got children where the stronger their denial, the more likely it is they did it.
Well,
I hope,
just keep.
but Wood is not a child, so
Amen. Amen.
okay.
Well, and I think that, there's also, now we've been speculating the whole time, but you would like to see in this type of situation, like patterns that were established, other people come forward, like all the things that you would imagine would have been something that that would have been where there's smoke, there's fire sort of thing. And so, that remains to be seen. It seems unlikely given the fact that we've We've vetted the man all the way up to the highest position we could bestow upon someone, and yet, here we are in this uncertain times, and I for one have just been redoubled in praying for the people involved who have, the responsibility has fallen on them to judge, to examine, to seek out the truth in this situation, and that the truth will come out, or if it has come out, then the confusion will be clarified, and that somehow there will be a stronger, clearer sense of I don't know, of trust in the process on the other side of this. That's my prayer. That's my expectation in all of these three things. And as messy and as human and as sinful as groups of people will ever be, this side of heaven, nevertheless, I do trust that there are people of goodwill, integrity, and of proper fear before God, before man, that are involved in this. And I await the outcome of this, and remain prayerful and hopeful, despite the confusion and the sort of darkness that has currently descended over parts of our fair church.
We seek the truth unflinchingly, even if we will lament what it reveals, because as Christ promised, it's the truth that will set us free. And we
Amen.
have to trust that He is in charge of everything as we know that He is. That's going to be all the time that we have for ourselves today. Thanks for listening to Stand Firm. If you want to keep the conversation going, please be in touch with us. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com, or you can join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks, as always, to JD Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.